Well, thanks to everyone who is here today, and hopefully more people will be able to get this information from the session after the conference, because I know there's a whole host of competing sessions that everyone is interested in. So the COPD Foundation is a national nonprofit organization. Our mission is to prevent and cure COPD, and also to improve the lives of people that are affected by the disease, you know, both patients, family members, and other stakeholders that we serve, healthcare providers, and hopefully the public health community is a part of that as well. So Winston talked a lot about COPD. I just wanted to share one slide that I borrowed from one of our medical leaders, because I think it really showcases how we think about COPD has changed over the years. At first, if you had shown the slide what causes COPD, it would just be the cigarette smoke into a funnel in COPD. And over time, we started learning a little bit more about exactly how that is happening. And in Berthes data, we saw that about a little under 25% of people had not smoked. So there's clearly a complex interrelationship happening. And in order to really solve the issues associated with COPD, we need to think beyond just tobacco and look at all of the other risk factors, causes, and make sure that we're also treating the chronic disease aspect of COPD and helping the 15 million people that are diagnosed and the 12 million people that are undiagnosed with this disease, while also critically focusing still on tobacco cessation. So you saw some of this data already. I'm not going to go through it all, but COPD is common and costly. It's much more common than most people think. It's much more costly than most people think. One highlight I want to point out is 16.4 million lost days of work. So we know about medical costs and the burden of hospitalizations, but COPD is a workforce issue too. And these are just people diagnosed with COPD. The NIH thinks that there's 12 million people out there that have COPD that haven't received an accurate diagnosis. So these costs are really just the low end of the numbers here. The other issue that's really driving the attention in COPD right now is the hospitalization and rehospitalization issue. You'll see on the left side of the screen here, or I guess your right side of the screen, sorry, some of the statistics that are related to hospitalizations. COPD was added to the Hospital Readmissions Reduction Program starting in October 2014, and it sent health systems scrambling. And this is a major opportunity for the public health community to come forward and say, well, we can help you find these solutions, because they need to find them. It's I think powerful that if you went to a hospital today and you looked at anyone in the hospital over 40 years old, one in five of them will likely have a COPD diagnosis. Doesn't mean they're there just for COPD, but they likely have COPD. So COPD doesn't occur in a vacuum. You saw this in North Carolina with the common comorbidities. We have a booth here, and we were asking people as they come up, how do you work with the COPD community? And many people said, no, but I work with CHF, or I work with diabetes, or I work with older adults. You are working with the COPD community, and that may just not be the main reason why you're working with them, but COPD is a hidden cause of many issues, and you are likely touching those patients. And again, COPD affects your ability to work. One of the programs that we focused on quite a bit has been workforce outreach. The myth that COPD is only occurring in people over 65, the older white male that people thought had COPD, that's not true anymore, if it was ever true. Especially as it relates to the undiagnosed population. These are people that are working, that are struggling to stay in the workforce and stay productive and stay out of the disability system and early retirement. But they struggle. They struggle with shortness of breath, moving around the workplace. They're increased susceptibility to colds. You know, how many of you have gone to work sick? Well, that is especially a risk for people with COPD. They're more sensitive to fumes and dust. In fact, you see many occupations that have respirator-required positions have to annual spirometries every year, except we found in our focus groups and outreach that even when they were getting those spirometry tests every year, they weren't actually being talked to about COPD or referred to physicians with information about COPD. They are discomfort in non-climate controlled settings, and they may need some flexible schedules for treatment. So just You know, that's just one aspect of dealing with COPD. So COPD patients receive poor quality of care. This is a chart showing the actual best practice care along with what they received in different stages of hospitalization. On average, people receive 55% of evidence-based care. So why are we here? Well, we're not doing a lot about it, and that's something that we're trying to change. And it starts at the top. We have no federal dollars outside of NHLBI and the research money and the money they dedicate towards Learn More, Breathe Better, which is a small fraction of their budget, and the money that they fund basic science and you know clinical research with. We have no money going to CDC to address COPD. It is only done through tobacco cessation and air control issues. The chronic disease itself is not addressed. We have no national action plan. We were lucky enough to advocate and get a group together to produce the strategic framework that Winston referenced several years ago, but that has not moved towards a national action plan, something that we hope the NHLBI will be carrying forward over the next year if we have enough advocacy behind it, and they've been asked to do so. And we don't have a COPD program at the CDC. It is, you know, diabetes, stroke, heart disease, anything, we do not have that for COPD. Therefore, the states don't have any resources to address COPD. It is not embedded in community programs. Where it is being driven by health systems who have been harshly penalized because they have a high rate of COPD readmissions. So we welcome that attention, but we need to fix it from the public health side as well. Lung disease, overall, the 14th most funded disease category at NIH, when it's the third leading cause of death. And you can see this through the orange bars being the mortality, the more death statistics, and the blue bars being the research investing that is happening right now. And this is not to demonize any of the other research that's being done for diseases, because it's critical for all of those communities, but it just shows a bit of a disparity in how we're treating COPD. So just to set the stage a little bit about the next programs, you know, that I'll talk about, we looked at how is our community communicating? And it was done to really dispel the myth that we can't communicate with our community online. People say you can't reach COPD patients online. They're older, they're not using technology. So we did a little bit of a survey through the foundation. And I think some of the results were surprising for us. I think that they're not generalizable to the entire country, and we still need to really make sure that we are addressing those the segment of our community that's not online. But it really proved to us that there's value in investing in online-based communication channels. So we looked, and in a very large percentage of people say they do actually connect with their friends and family through social media. It was, you know, less than a quarter of people that said they didn't. And then also about support groups. We also looked at email use, and people say, I check my email daily. It was about 14% or so that said they didn't. So, you know, it really proved to us that there's a value in going this direction. So we, looking at all of the needs that I presented before, kind of strategized around how are we going to move forward as a community organization, nonprofit group. We decided to focus on a few things. One of them is in educating employers. Like I said, the employers have a huge role to play in their connection to our patients, both diagnosed and undiagnosed. So we built the employer toolkit. So we've gone out and we've worked with employers to teach them about COPD, estimate their costs in their own covered populations, integrate risk screening. So if you take away one thing, take away that all you have to do is talk about COPD. It's a great first step. And make sure that people you reach in whatever population you're dealing with understand what those early signs and symptoms are so that they can bring it up and they don't misattribute it to a normal sign of aging or a normal sign of smoking, because there is no normal sign of smoking, and it's a disease process that may have gotten started, and they need to bring that up with their physicians. So the fact that 12 million people are undiagnosed are really, it's a product of people not bringing up the right symptoms and the physician's not asking the right questions. Once that conversation has begun, then you can really work on getting to the bottom of the issue, whether it's COPD or another issue. So we also really want to focus on facilitating better quality of care and community partnerships. And we started doing this through convening the community around the issue of readmission, since I said the issue is driving most of the attention and money being spent in COPD right now. So the second readmission summit occurred this past March, and our goals were really to align on focus areas related to readmission. What happened, CMS added COPD to the penalty list, but there isn't a lot of evidence that guides hospitals on how to reduce their readmission rate. So they're being penalized for something that there isn't real evidence base to tell them how to prevent. So while we are in most ways happy that COPD was added to that list of penalties, we are certainly understanding that the hospitals need help. And we can't wait 3 years for a bunch of clinical trials to be published. We need to facilitate that conversation now. And we need to use what we have in the community and integrate COPD into many of your programs at the public health level. So what were some of our results, if you are here particularly interested in readmissions? The summit was 2 days. It was a multidisciplinary group of people, not just providers. It was also patients. You see in the bottom a COPD patient. A COPD patient started the morning. They closed the day. Each day, before we even had introductory remarks, the patient told their story. What is the problem that we're trying to fix? It's coming from the patient, and we need to understand it from their level. So we must put the patient and family at the center of efforts. We need to develop more evidence, best practices, but also evidence-based information over time. But we also need to share and implement what we know now. We must make pulmonary rehab a national imperative. We've been talking over the last few days at the booth about pulmonary rehab. Exercise, exercise, exercise. It is the number one treatment for COPD. It doesn't require any drug. Of course, the needed treatments for COPD, most, it's a comprehensive treatment package, but pulmonary rehab is critical and has saved people's lives. To implement risk stratification, very critical. You can't address intensive programs to everyone, but you can find who is most at risk and work with that population. To define what optimal care and needs are based on the individual's goals, because you may have an individual who has vastly different goals for their own health and their own daily functioning than others, and you really need to work with them and customize a care plan. And then to continue to pursue innovation. So we need to act now, but we need to make sure that we are innovative in the way we think about design of programs, we're innovative in technology, and we're innovative in partnerships, and I think the public health community has a big role to play there. So from the summit, we created Praxis, and I would encourage you all to check out the community. It is an online collaboratory to really foster this innovation and foster the sharing that the summits needed to occur. So there is a discussion board where you can ask your colleagues questions. It's for healthcare providers, public health professionals, policymakers, and the like. It's for a resource repository to search what is out there for available resources, research, toolkits, and others. And it's really going to be a learning platform, a collaborative platform, and we hope that next year we can stand here and talk about some of the results that have happened as a result of Praxis. So what is the big picture approach to COPD that we really need to focus on? It's improving care, it's the research for the future, and it's fostering that community that we need now. And if we can take these three arms and bring them together, then I think we will really, truly transform the lives of COPD patients. But really, we need to focus on policy as well. You didn't see policy in that three-arm thing, but policy is what's going to drive our ability to get all of these things done. So we need a coordinated federal response that will allow all of you to have more resources to address COPD. We need to focus on data collection, prevention, awareness, education, treatment, and research through all of these agencies that you see here. These are just, this is just the tip of the iceberg in how we could integrate COPD into existing policies and existing programs. Some of them are more obvious than others, but we went through and we've outlined exactly how each agency could then somehow play a part in improving the lives of people with COPD. So in the states, that was the federal approach. In the states, there's ways that we can tackle COPD without the federal government coming in and saying, we believe in this, we're going to make it a priority. Let's do it in the states and let's force them to do it at the federal level. Anywhere from awareness and ceremonial action, which is starting to pick up speed, it's November COPD Awareness Month, to being more committal, to creating commissions and action plan, to look at state insurance benefit programs and make sure we're doing value-based benefit design and screening, to transformative actions. Let's have a state step up and say, well, just because CDC isn't giving us the funding, this is a priority for our state, and we're going to establish a COPD program. Ultimately, we hope that we can get there, but we need everyone's support to do it. So November is COPD Awareness Month. We have a campaign, Me and COPD, a number of different initiatives going on throughout the month. There will be Twitter chats with NHLBI. There will be events and screenings across the country. There are online activities, offline activities, and we really hope that we can use this month. I know other diseases have this month as Awareness Month too, but we hope that we can use this month to really catapult COPD into the public's attention and to start off 2016 with a little bit of momentum and make it a very transformative year. So with that, that's it. I don't know if you want questions or no.
Before Jamie takes off, are there any questions for her?
So I think you're referring to the state improvement, health improvement plan. So we've been advocating that one way COPD can be included is by adding COPD goals, most likely related to to Healthy People 2020 objectives, into their state health improvement plans. It's happening if we put a direct push on them. So it took meetings after meeting with the health department to get them to consider adding a goal related to COPD. So it's happening to the point that we can get that direct conversation going. Unfortunately, you know, being a small organization, that is hard to do in a number of states, but we are starting that, and we would welcome anyone who's interested in having that conversation, because it's an easy way, a no-cost way, to at least get COPD on the radar screen. In Texas and in Connecticut this past legislative session, we actually worked with some legislators to direct the health department via law to create a COPD state plan, or a study at least, leading to a state plan. So that's one way that we can approach it. In others, we are doing it as a public-private partnership, and we hope that the legislature will endorse it next legislative session and give their health department a little bit of cover for participating in the efforts, spending the time, since they don't have a categorical funding stream. Sorry, I have to leave you all 20-month-old at home.
Thank you, Jamie.